have time, because I've been giving so many different classes that I don't remember. I think last time we discussed the general issue of the history of the Chokmah. So I was studying the Gemara in Shabbos relating the Isur of Tiltul Kelim and the gradual evolution of that from a very severe set of halachot from one extreme to the other. Is that correct? We studied Gemara. But we didn't study any of the other Gemaras dealing with Mokta, I don't think.
Actually, we just listed them.
We listed several of them, right?
Right. Okay. We listed the Mishnayos.
We listed the Mishnayos. Right. What we listed last time was also the Mishnayos with the issue of a Deraita versus a Derabanan.
One point in both of you is that the strictness of Shabbos, is that related to the Tzedokim and the...
Yeah.
It may be related. It may very well be related with that. The point is that we don't have a great deal of independent historical information. So we're dealing, with reconstructions and in other words, the places that I know of independent of what we find in the Gemara, that is, extra rabbinic sources, extra halachic sources as to what the actual practice was as far as Hilchot Shabbat are concerned. Well, we have Philo to some extent. Then we have the famous passages in the Book of Maccabees, which indicates and also mentioned by Josephus, namely that there was a reluctance even to engage in battle on Shabbat until they issued a Hetzer to that extent. And then various things in the Book of Jubilees. But this is essentially the only extra halachic sources that I'm aware of. So to summarize what we said last time, the Gemara itself, in one of its rare historical analyses, shows, or it takes the position, that the laws of Tiltul Kelim, the prohibition against the carrying of Kelim on Shabbat, underwent a drastic series of modifications from a law which was extremely severe in the time of the middle of Bayit Sheni. The Gemara attributes it to a Gzera of Nehemiah, but in any event, the description of the Gemara was that originally the laws of Kelim were such that you weren't allowed to carry any utensil whatsoever for any purpose whatsoever, with the exception essentially of tableware, a knife, a spoon, and the analog in those days of a fork, if it wasn't really a table fork, but something to cut up the dates with. And then there was a successive waves of relaxation of the laws, until finally the current laws of the Isurim of Muktzah, as far as they part the Kelim are concerned, are phrased exactly the opposite, namely that you're allowed to move any klishim lachto leheter for any of the three purposes. That is, you can move it to use, you can move it to get it out of the way, or you can move it to protect it. And a klishim lachto leisur, like a hammer or a screwdriver or something like that, which by definition is something whose primary purpose is to perform a malacha that's prohibited on Shabbat, you're allowed to move to use, like you can move the hammer to crack a walnut if you want to use it to open up a walnut, or you can use your needle to remove a splinter, even though the needle itself is a klishim lachto leisur. And you can also move a klishim lachto leisur if it's in the way, you can move it out of the way. The only general isur of tiltul kelim that applies is the isur of mechama letzeil. You can't move the hammer in from the porch in order to protect it from being stolen, for example. Those are the laws of Hilchot Tiltul Kelim. So originally, a kli halachically was a reason to prohibit something from being carried, and it turned just the opposite, that a kli becomes something which is what allows you to carry, except, of course, for very special types of kelim, which have their own status of isur. And the three types of isur of tiltul kelim that we will soon study in the Gemara and not all of the Tanoim agree with these isurim, but the three additional categories are mutzah machmat isur, if this is a utensil whose carrying at the onset of Shabbat would have involved an actual melacha at the time, like, as the Gemara says, a lamp which was actually burning. You would not allow it to be moved, to move it while it was burning, and then it might become asur if you believe in mutza machmat isur, mutza machmat miyus, if it's an object which is disgusting. And finally, mukta machmat chisaron kis, if the utensil is so precious that you would never think of, for example, you wouldn't use a surgical instrument to sharpen your pencil. And there, in other words, if it's a utensil whose usage is so specialized and precious that it only is set aside for, it's only used for a very highly specialized purpose, that's called a mukta machmat chisaron kis. Okay, so the laws of kelim have been essentially completely reversed. Originally, the laws a kli was a reason to prohibit something from being carried, and now to the opposite, it becomes permissible to carry a kli. And it's, as we will see when we go through some of the Gemaras, the what is not necessarily clear or in general will not be permitted will be an object which is not a kli. So instead of being a cause for isur, the concept of a kli has turned around and become a cause for heter. And that's a historical development, that it's not my invention or the analysis of some historian. This is what we saw in the text of the Gemara itself. And as I say, it's relatively rare that we find such a complete historical discussion within the Gemara. But of course, the laws of Muktza apply more broadly than to the laws of Tiltul Kelim. Like, for example, if we interpret our Mishnah as referring to Muktza, and that's one of the major interpretations of the Mishnah, that the Beitza is Asura because of Muktza, Beitza, whatever it is not a Kli. So that therefore the laws of Muktza apply more broadly, and we have to ask ourselves Well, we may not have to ask ourselves, but the Rishonim ask themselves, what are the reasons for the laws of Muktza? All right? My own personal opinion, as expressed last time, is that this becomes a meaningful question. Why do we have laws of Muktza once the laws of Shabbat themselves, but also the laws of Melacha and Shabbat, have been crystallized into the Lamed Tet Melachot? If we accept that there was a period of time in which this abstract definition of what constituted a melacha on Shabbat was not so clearly formulated as being a creative, productive act and falling into 39 categories, then perhaps we don't need so precise an explanation as to why there is a prohibition of muktzah. It's just one of the general prohibitions of Shabbat, which are one of the ancient prohibitions, and we will take it at that. But the Rishonim were concerned with this, and we basically have three opinions in the Rishonim as to what the origins or the reasons for the laws of Muktza are. Okay, so let's read the three in historical order. Let's first take a look at my handout on page 12. This is from the Sheiltot of Rabbi Achai Gaon. So this is the position not only of the Shultat of Rabbi Achai Gaon, but this is also the position of Rashi in various places in the Gemara. But instead of reading it in Rashi, let's read it in the Shultat. Shultat, the asir luhu l'debet Yisrael l'meichal b'yom ha'deshabta, mid'am d'havi muktza mi'etmol la'achila. It is prohibited for a Jew to eat on Shabbat an object which had been set aside yesterday from eating, had been definitely set aside as not being foodstuffs. Kagon ta'eni ve'invi da'asiknu li'ibushayhu, that like figs or raisins, which were moved up onto the roof, for example, to dry out in the sun. You took the grapes up onto the roof, or the figs up onto the roof, and you were planning to let them dry for however many days it took to have them dry out in the sun. And obviously you don't touch that stuff, because in the immediate stage between it being a fresh fruit or it being a raisin, it's not very palatable. But in any event, your intention was deliberately set these grapes aside, you've put them away, and you and you've definitely confirmed in your own mind and by your actions that you're not going to eat these grapes this coming Shabbat. Right? Then comes the next morning, you decide you want to take some anyway. Okay, that is a classic example of muktzah that everyone agrees to, even Rabbi Shimon. We have a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon as to whether or not there exists muktzah, but even Rabbi Shimon, who takes the most extreme position, lukula, as far as the laws of muktzah are concerned, admits to the concept of muktzah, just limits it to a very narrow focus, and his limitation of the laws of muktzah are basically this, that is, foodstuffs or other objects which you have deliberately put away not to use. Okay? That's muktzah.
And that day those three that you mentioned before,
machmas. No, this is the classical category of muktzah. You might call it muktzah machmat gufo, but that that's not giving it any more name. This is the classical category of muktzah. And the Sheiltus is asking, and he gives an example. And it turns out that by the morning they had all dried, so you have good raisins on the roof. Don't need to leave them up there. Alright? You're not allowed to eat. And the She'iltzit's question then is, what is the reason, what is the origin of this law of Muktzah? But before we even come to his answer, notice that he formulates the laws of Muktzah as an Isur Achila. If you ask someone in the street, what are the laws of muktzah? It's a prohibition against carrying or maybe touching if the person may not be educated halachically. But here we see that the she'iltot is taking for granted that the primary prohibition of muktzah was a prohibition of achila, not a prohibition of tilta. Okay? Delo azmin achila mochola, dechtiv, because, and what is the origin of this? Vehechinu et asher yavir. That the Jews were commanded to bring in the extra portion of man on Friday in order to have everything ready for Shabbat. Okay? Therefore, according to the She'iltot, the laws of Muktzah, Amar Rabbah, Mehaikra, Rabbah learns from this pasuk. We have Rabbah, he apparently had Rabbah. Amar Rabbah, Rabbah Mehaikra, Chol Mechin L'Shabbat, V'chol Mechin L'Yom Tov, Ve'en Shabbat mechin liyom tov, v'lo yom tov mechin l'chashabbat. Rabbah derives from this pasuk a din d'oraita that if a Shabbat occurs after a Yom Tov, if Yom Tov comes out on Friday, or vice versa, Yom Tov occurs on Sunday, then something which was completed on the previous day, which was not a Yom Chol, is prohibited to be eaten d'oraita the following day. Right? If an egg was laid on a Sunday, which is a Yom Tov, since, as we learned last week, it leaves the follicle 24 hours previous, and therefore the gemar of the egg, as far as Rabbah's halacha is concerned, is 24 hours preceding, and that 24 hours preceding is a Shabbat, for example. If we're talking about a holiday that occurs on Sunday, it is prohibited. So according to, that is a din d'oraita. And what the She'iltos is saying, and also what Rashi says, even though Tosas jumps on him in a number of places, is that this law of Hachana is primary, and the laws of Muktzah are derivative from the laws of Hachana. It's okay? The Afilu lo Rabbi Shimon deletle Muktzah, even Rabbi Shimon, who's of the opinion that there is no law of Muktzah, that's the way the Gemara quotes Rabbi Shimon, he does not believe in Muktzah, you're allowed to cut up the carcass of an animal that died on Shabbat, for example, to feed it to animals. Rabbi Yehuda says that an animal that dies on Shabbat you're not allowed to move, because since you had no access to using it, Bein Hashmashot, therefore became muktzah, and even though it died on Shabbat, now you may want to cut it up for your dogs, you're not allowed to, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that it's muktzah. But Rabbi Shimon rejects that notion and does not believe in the law of muktzah. Uman tana kama d'shari Rabbi Shimon hi, d'ashaminen le deletle muktzah. D'tnan Rabbi Shimon omeya kol hanerot metaltelin chutzman haner hadolek ba b'Shabbat. So Rabbi Shimon in a number of places does not agree to the existence of the laws of Mochtza. Nevertheless, in this case where the food has been deliberately set aside by the individual with an act and an intent clearly to take it out of the category of usable foodstuffs because it needs some further processing, he agrees that that Mochtza then applies. You're not allowed to eat it, and you're not allowed to carry it. The Tanya, Achad Beitza Shenolda B'Shabbat, Achad Beitza Shenolda B'Yom Tov, Ein Metaltolin Ota, Ela Velo Lachasot Ba Etakli, Velo Lo Lachasot Ba Etakli, Velo Lesmoch Ba Karei Hamita, Aval Kofina Lehakli B'Shvil Shelo Tishaveh. Usveika Asur Netarva Ve'Elef Kulan Asurot, Ushav Peri Dasiknol Yevushai Uvelo Yavishu Ben Hashmashot. Pluktad Rabbi Yishimon, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yudasavah Mutzah, Inon Asim, Rabbi Shimon, Savah Lav Mutzah, Inon Vishar, Vehilchatat Rabbi Shimon, Ve'itma Pligi, Rabbi Chavir, Chadam, Vachol Shabbat Kula, Hilchatat Rabbi Shimon, Vami Mutzah, Machmat Miyus, Umahi, we'll study this in the Gemara. So let's not go any further because we'll read this in the actual text of the Gemara. But the She'iltis' opinion then is that the laws of Mutzah are derivative from the laws of Hachana, and the original law of Mutzah was a law of Achila, and according to the She'iltot and according to Rashi, the Mukta of Achila is an Iso D'oraita. The laws of Mukta of Tiltul are only Asurim Midrabban. Now, if we turn to my handout page 20, we can read what the Rambam has to say on this. The Rambam has a broader view. So, in Perek Chavdalad Halacha Yud Beis, Asru Chachamim Letaltel Miktsat Tvarim B'Shabbat Kederach Shilhose B'Chol. Chazal prohibited carrying an object on Shabbat, the way you certain objects on Shabbat, the way they are carried on Chol. Umutnei ma nag'u b'isur zeh. What is the reason for this prohibition? Do you have it, Danny?
Mm-hmm.
What is the reason for this prohibition? Umutnei ma nag'u b'isur zeh amru. Uma im hisiru neviyim v'tzivu shelo yehe hiluchacha b'Shabbat ki hiluchacha b'Shabbat b'Chol. If your stride on Shabbat should not be similar to the way you walk in Chol, v'lo sichata Shabbat k'sichata Chol, and you should watch your conversation, that your conversation on Shabbat should not be the same as your conversation in Chol. Shneimar v'daber davar, kal v'chomer, certainly shelo yehet tiltul b'Shabbat k'tiltul b'Chol. The things that you carry around on Shabbat should not be identical or similar to the things that you do in Chol. Kedei shelo yeh kiyom chol beina, and so that because otherwise you will convert Shabbat into a yom chol. V'yavo lahagbia ulatakein kelim mipinal lepinal mibayit lebayit or lahatznia avanim uchiyotzei b'hen shaharehu batel v'yoshev v'veto. He's staying home from work. That's a good day to do the household chores. So what if you allow him to just carry all objects around which are not needed for his purposes, then the guy will postpone all of his household chores from the workday week till Shabbat, and he will spend Shabbat doing his chores. He's staying at home. V'yavakesh davashi yatasekbo v'nimtza shelo Shabbat. In other words, this is a generalized prohibition. It doesn't come from something technical like Tachona or Behechinu es Asher Yaviu, but rather, in order to just make the spirit of Shabbat different from the spirit of Chol, you don't allow a person to carry things around, because otherwise what will happen is that you will convert Shabbat into a chore day rather than into a rest day. Yeah. Right. He puts it under the mitzvah taseh, and that's what the Ramban says in Chumash as well. Va'od, the Ramban adds, kishi yevaker v'yataltel kelim shemlachto le'isur. In the case of a kli shemlachto le'isur, if a person is allowed to examine and carry a kli shemlachto le'isur, efshar shiyetasek b'hen ma'at v'yavol lidei melacha. If you allow the person to carry the screwdriver around for no specific purpose, but rather to protect it, he may remember that he has a screw loose in his cabinet or something like that, and therefore use it for an isur. So another reason for the prohibition of isur tiltul kelim derives from the possibility of actually doing a mloch. There is a certain proportion of the population that have no profession, and they're constantly unemployed, like the people that spend all day in the coffee house, right, or chatting and walking around or roaming the streets or sitting in the coffee houses. They don't do work 7 days a week. Okay? For these people who have no useful employment the 6 days of the week, right? Then, if you don't induce some prohibition on Shabbat, which marks Shabbat off from the rest of the week, for these unemployed people, you can't tell any difference whatsoever between what constitutes Shabbat and what constitutes Chol. They're sitting around drinking coffee in the coffee house 7 days a week. What's the difference between Shabbat and Chol? L'fichach shvita midvarim elu hi hashvita hashave b'chol adam. In other words, other melachol, if you prohibit someone from spinning or from weaving, well, if he's a weaver, that's his profession, he won't do his weaving on Shabbat. If a guy's a ditch digger, that's a melacha of choresh, he won't dig his ditches on Shabbat. If he's a farmer and you prohibit him from sowing the field or from plowing or from reaping, then those you're preventing him from going out and doing his work on Shabbat. But for the 10% or whatever percent of the unemployed in the population who don't have any profession whatsoever, then you should tell them that they can't go out to the field to do their sowing or reaping. It has no effect on them. Therefore, the Rambam says, you should have some prohibitions which affect everybody equally. And those are the laws of Mutza. And mipnei dvarim elu nagu b'isur hatiltul, ויאסרו שלא יטלטל אדם בשבת אלא כלים הצריך להם כמו שיתבאר. So that they gave this general prohibition of Isur, including, he says, the Isur that you're not allowed to carry any utensil except a utensil that you have some particular use for, as will be explained. And a little bit later on in Yitzh Hashem this hour, we'll go through the rest of the Rambam here. So the Rambam's interpretation of the origins of the laws of Muktzah have to do basically with a broad Isur Shabbos. You want to make Shabbat seem different than the rest of the week, and the prohibition about going out into your business will affect most people, but there will be some percentage of people who don't have any business or profession, who don't work the 6 days of the week, so unless you institute some laws which clearly delimitate Shabbat for everybody, you'll have a certain percentage of the population for whom Shabbat is no different from the rest of the week. That's the Rambam's
spiritual.
Yeah.
Usually
doesn't. But this just shows that the laws of Muktzah were problematic for him, and therefore he felt the compulsion to give some justification and explanation for it. And finally, the third opinion is the opinion of the Raivad, who has a very narrow view of the base of the laws of Muktzah. Katav ha-Raivad Zal, od amru, otu tiltul lav tzorech hotzahu, isn't tiltul usually preparatory for the melacha of hotzah? There's an av melacha of not being allowed to carry something from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim, and normally, before you begin to carry things out, you carry them around indoors. Va'od bimei Nechemya ben Chakalya nishnat nishnazu, she'amru shlosha keilim tkanim nitalim al ha-shulchan, nimtza, כי מפני חיוב ההוצאה אסרו בטלטול, מה שאסרו הוא גדר להוצאה. In other words, from the fact that the Gemara relates the Isur of Nefilat Kelim to the story that's mentioned in Nehemiah, that they were used to bring the produce in from out of the city into the city on Shabbat, that therefore the whole, and the Gemara says that the laws of Muktzah were instituted in the time of Nehemiah. Therefore, the Raivad concludes that the base for the laws of Muktzah are the laws of Hotzah. So we have three opinions, basically, and these are the three major opinions in the Rishonim. The opinion of the She'iltos and Rashi that the laws of Muktzah are derivative from the laws of Hachana, and are basically an Isur Achila in origin, and then developed into Isur Tiltul or what have you. Then the view of the Rambam that this is a broad category of Isurim, but basically to make a clear-cut differentiation between Shabbat and Chol, and then the Raivad, who says that this was a specific Zera having to do with Tiltul. Okay, so those are the three opinions. All right. Let's now read. Now you have to help me because I don't quite remember which Gemaras we studied last week and which we didn't. I think we just studied the Gemara on the laws of Tiltul, or the history of Tiltul Kelim, right? But we didn't study any of the other laws. Yeah, the plow and etc. So let's read first of all some of the other sources in Masechet Shabbat. Turn to my page 3. So this is from the Gemara in Kirab. We're obviously not going to read through all the places in Shas where the laws of Motzah are mentioned, but let's read through enough of them to begin to get a picture of how these laws were formulated. The Mishnah says, "Metaltolin ne'er chadash aval lo yasham." Does everyone know what a ne'er is?
It's a lamp.
It's a lamp, right? And a lamp which holds oil. Metaltolin. It's not a candle, in other words, because we have to understand what the word means. Metaltolin ne'er chadash aval lo yasham. Rabbi Shimon omer kol ha'neirot metaltolin chutz min ha'ner hadolek b'shabbat. According to the Tanakhama, you can carry an unused lamp, but not a used one. This would be an instance of muktzah machmat mius. It's filthy. It has all of the soot and oil from the lamp, and therefore it's not something that you would normally want to use for any reason. And the Gemara says, the Mishnah says that you're not allowed. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. He does not agree with this principle of muktzah machmat mius. And according to Rabbi Shimon, the only thing that you're not allowed to carry on Shabbat is a burning lamp, but not a lamp which is extinguished.
So what use have you got for moving that lamp? It's not going to burn.
What do you mean? You may want to use the oil for your salad. You may want to carry it around. You want to get it out of the way. You want to maybe use it as a paperweight. Your napkins are flying off the table, and you want to put something on them. Okay. You may want to clear it off the table.
Assume that there's oil in it in a way.
Doesn't necessarily assume that there's oil in it at all. No, you have. Let's say someone's giving a shiur and there's a hurricane blowing up and the papers are burning off the table and the lamp is gone out. He wants to take the lamp and put it on here as a paperweight. According to Rabbi Shimon, you're allowed, and according to the Tanakhama, you're not allowed unless it's a new lamp that hasn't been used yet.
A new lamp, you're allowed.
You know, that's what the Mishnah says. Metaltolin ne'er chadash aval lo yasham. That's what it says, right? Now the Gemara brings a Tosefta, which says that this is really a three-way machloket, not a two-way machloket. There are three alternatives, not just two. Tana Rabbanan, metaltolin ne'er chadash aval lo yasham devrei Rabbi Yehuda. Our Tanakhama is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Meir Omer, kol haneirot metaltolin, chutz min haneir shehed liku bo b'shabbat. You're allowed to carry any lamp except the lamp that was actually burning Friday night. If this was a Shabbat lamp and you had lit it Friday night, then, says Rabbi Meir, you're not allowed to carry it on Shabbat because of the laws of Muktzah. There's a principle of midi that katsoy mibein hashmashot, that katsoy luchu liyoma, something that you were not allowed to carry because of the laws of Muktzah, Friday night becomes prohibited for the rest of the day. So even though now there's nothing burning in the lamp, nevertheless, at the onset of Shabbat, you were not allowed to carry it, and therefore you're not allowed to carry it now. Rabbi Shimon omer chutz man haneir hadolek b'Shabbat. The only thing that you're not allowed to carry is a lamp that's actually burning. But if the lamp went out, then you are allowed to carry it according to Rabbi Shimon. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's a principle of muktzah machmat mi'us. The only type of lamp that you're allowed to carry is a new one. According to Rabbi Meir, there's a notion of muktzah machmat isur.
It
was something that was prohibited for some reason on the onset of Shabbat. Even if that prohibition no longer applies, it remains muktzah. And according to Rabbi Shimon, there is no notion of muktzah machmat mi'us, and there's no notion of muktzah machmat isur. The only thing that you can't do is carry a lit lamp around, because then you're affecting the flame. Because then that's a possibility of a malach al havara, not the question of muktzah. Right? Kivta.
What's the light went out by carrying it around? So what if you didn't go out?
He put out the fire. It may have been a davar she'eino mitkaven. It may have been a melacha she'eino tzricha legufar. You may not be chayav d'oraita, but you know. But still, nevertheless, it would be prohibited. Kafta, if the lamp actually went out, mutar l'taltala. Aval kos v'karava shishit lo yizizam im kamo. But these large receptacles, one should not where there's an assumption that they will not be extinguished the whole Shabbat, then it's like Gogogogogarat, but Simukim, he put this aside. If he lit the candle Friday night, and the lamp Friday night, and it has enough oil in it, a major lamp rather than a small lamp that would normally burn all the way through, the intent then was that it should be a 24-hour lamp rather than a 5-hour lamp, and therefore it becomes prohibited. Rabbi Eliezer bar Shimon Omer, Mistapek min haneir hachaba, umin hashemen hamataftef, afilu b'sha'asha haneir dolek. Amar Rabbi Abayi, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, savar lei ka'avu abachada, upalig alei habachada. Savar lei ka'avu abachada dolet lei mukza. He agrees with his father about the absence of mukza. Upalig alei bachada, de'ilu avu asavar kaba in lo kaba lo, v'yu savar, afal gav de lo kaba. Why are you not allowed to move those? No. So the Gemara says, Seifa ata'an lo Rabbi Yosef. If this is a reversion to Rabbi Yehuda's position, then what's the aval? It should be no but there. Elamar mazutu la'olam Rabbi Shimon. V'kika sharo Rabbi Shimon v'ner zuta, in a small lamp. V'da'ate aluye. Because there was always in the back of your mind the understanding that the lamp would go out in the course of the night. Aval hani the nefishi lo. V'hatanya motach Hashemin shebenei v'shebekara asur Rabbi Shimon matir hatam kara dumya danei. Hocha kara dumya dekos. Okay. All right. So this is one example, and in fact, lahalacha we agree with Rabbi Shimon as far as rejecting Mutzah Machmat Mi'us, but we don't agree with Rabbi Shimon as far as rejecting Mutzah Machmat Isur. In other words, as far as this particular halacha is concerned, we take the middle position, which is that of Rabbi Meir, rather than that of... All right. Let's go to the... Let's go to page 6, okay? The Mishnah says, Kol ha-kelim nitalin chutz, kol ha-nitalim kelim nitalin l'tzorech v'shelo l'tzorech. Rabbi Nehemiah omer, ein nitalin ela l'tzorech. So the Mishnah, of course, is obscure because we don't know what kol ha-kelim refers to. What does the word kol mean? And what is the word letzorech? The Gemara begins with the phrase of what of an analyzing what is the word letzorech. My letzorech or my shalom letzorech. Amar Abaye or Amar Rabba letzorech davar shem lachto lehetel letzorech kufo. When it says that kol hakelim nitalim letzorech, that means a kli shem lachto lehetel, like a knife or a fork or a spoon, that you're using for itself, that is, you're moving it to use. Letzorech kufo means that you intend to use this utensil. Shelo letzorech, davar shem lachto leheter letzorech makoma. That you're not allowed, according to Rav Nehemiah, then you would, according to the Mishnah, according to Rav Nehemiah, excuse me, the halacha would be that you would not be allowed to move a spoon or a fork to get it out of the way. For davar shem lachto leisur, a utensil whose principal purpose is the isur, like a needle or a hammer, letzorech gufo in, letzorech makomo lo. Va'ata Rabbi Nechemio lemeimod, va'filu davar shem lachto leheter, letzorech gufo in, letzorech makomo lo. Okay? So the first hypothesis of I assume it should be Abaye, is that the Mishnah says that a kli shem lachto leheter, the Tanakama allows you to move it either to use or get out of the way. And the klishim lachto li isur, you're not allowed to move to get out of the way, but you're allowed to move to use. And according to Rav Nechemia, even a klisha malachtol leheter, you're not allowed to move to get out of the way. Amalei rov al etzoch makol moshe lo letzorech kal yitle. How can you say letzorech makol mo that you need the places considered as lo letzorech? Elo amarov al etzorech davosh malachtol leheter vein letzorech kufo vein letzorech makol mo shelo letzorech v'afilu mechama letzeh. That in the case of a klisha malachtol leheter, you're allowed to bring it in. Right, you left your china outside on the porch and you're afraid that the wind will knock it over, you're allowed to bring it in. But davar shem lachto le'isur, letzach gofal, letzach mekomo, in mechama letzeh lo, and that's how we have the halacha today. But atar Rabbi Nechemia le'meimah, v'afilu davar shem lachto le'heter, letzach gofal, letzach mekomo, in mechama letzeh lo. Yatar Rav Safra, Rav Acha, Rav Huna, Rav Huna, Rav Kina, v'yatvi kami lo rabba. Aliva the Rabbi Nechemia. According to you, according to Rabbi Nechemia, and according to your opinion, that Rabbi Nechemia says that letzorech mekomo, klisha, even a klisha malachto leheter, you're not allowed to move. Hani ka'arod, heichi metaltalina. How can we clear the table? You're saying that a klisha malachto leheter, even. Is letzorech makom mol? You're not allowed to move. The implication there is that after you've finished eating, you don't need the plates anymore. You're only clearing the table to get the plates out of the way, and that should be prohibited. That's obviously nobody lives that way. Nobody leaves the table dirty and upset and not clean on Shabbat. So that therefore, how do you explain the obvious common practice a klisha malachto leheter letzorech makom mol? You would not be allowed to carry. So Amar Luhu Rav Safra. Rav Safra says, "Midi dehavi agerech shel rei." It is like the permissibility to removal of garbage or waste. Okay, let me remind you. Those of you who have, let's read the Gemara actually on Gerech Shel Rei. It's in Masechet Beitza. Do you have?
Alright,
where is it? It's on Radaf Lamed Chet on the Beis, I think. Is it? No, can I see your Gemara? Let me just check that I have to. No, it would be a little bit earlier. Yeah, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara says, "V'notlin kli tachat hadelef b'Shabbat." You can put a pail under the drip. It's if you have a leaky roof and some water is dripping in on Shabbat, you can put a pail under the drip on Shabbat. "V'notlin kli tachat hadelef b'Shabbat." Tana im nitmaleh hakli. If the pail gets full. Shofech, you can take it outside, pour it down the sink, or what have you, or outside. V'shoneh ve'eino nimna. In other words, not only are you allowed to put a pail under the drip on Shabbat, but you're also allowed to empty the pail on Shabbat. Be'rachya da'abaye dolov. There was a drip in the room in Abaye's house that had his mill, right? In his mill room or mill house, okay.
The rain would get wet.
Well, it was getting wet, and it was ruining his mill. Of course, he couldn't move the mill away on Shabbat because it's mukzah. So he needed some advice as to how to deal with it. Atala kamei da rabba. He came in front of his teacher rabba for some advice to how to handle this situation. Omar le zil aile lefurech lahatam. Move your bed into that room where the mill is. Okay. De lahavi kegerech sharei. Then, if this mill is filling up with water, it will be like a waste accumulation of waste. And therefore, since the accumulation of this water will bother you, if that's your bedroom, you will be allowed to remove it. Okay. Va'afke. So he was, in other words, giving Abaye some advice of how to create a legal fiction here. No, he's saying that if this was really his bedroom, and some garbage or would accumulate in the bedroom, then you would be allowed to remove it, right? The principle here is that even though there are laws of muktzah, it doesn't mean that on Shabbat you have to live in a pigsty. So that therefore all of these laws of muktzah have in a sense been suspended in the case of garbage removal. So what Rabbah was advising to Abaye was fake a garbage removal situation, right? If this wasn't your bedroom, you don't go into that room at all, why should it bother you that the mill is accumulating with water? And really, you're worried about the damage to the mill, but let's fake it. Move your bed into the room. Now you can pretend that that's your bedroom. You're going to sleep there. The mill is accumulating waste. Then you'll use that as a legal fiction to avoid the laws of muktzah. That was Rabbah's advice. There's a question. The Gemara says that this here is an, as you say, the Shulchan Aruch will say that this is a form of aroma, a form of legal fiction that's permissible in the case of hefse, in the case of chisaron kiss, as you say. However, Yativ Abaye b'kakashile, Abaye was a little more firm than his teacher, and says, v'chi osin gerav shalei l'chadchila, are you allowed to deliberately create a situation where something is garbage in order to apply the law? He was reluctant to accept the heter from his Rebbe. He was a bit too firm. Adahochi nafal be'rachya d'Abai. So while Abaye was pondering over the permissibility of doing this, the whole ceiling collapsed and destroyed his mill altogether. Amar teite li da'avwe adama. He says, that's my punishment for not following my teacher's permission. If I ask the shayla and my Rebbe says that it's muta, you shouldn't be too firm and not apply the heter when it was actually given. So I was immediately punished for not following this particular piece of advice. Amar Shmuel, geref shel rei, da'avit shel meimei raglayim, the chamber pot or the urine. Remember, this is before the days of indoor plumbing, right? So that if you had a chamber pot or relieved yourself, urinated on Shabbat and accumulated the urine, you wanted to get it out of the house. Mutar lahotziyam la'ashpa. You're allowed to carry it out to the outhouse or to the garbage. Ukeshu machsiro noten b'mayim machsiro. Samau minegugar shorei agav mana in v'nei atzmo lo tashma. Does that mean that you're allowed to remove a garbage only if it's accumulated in a utensil, but you can't get rid of garbage, of pure garbage? So he says tashma. Listen to this case. Tahu achbarta. There was a mouse. Dishtakech pe asham ke d'rabashi. I assume it was a dead mouse that was found amongst the spices of Rabashi. Pick it up by the tail and dispose of it. In other words, however the laws of muktzah are formulated, they were suspended or at least relaxed as far as the issue of garbage removal. Don't confuse muktzah matmius as a technical term, which is a reason for prohibiting the carrying on Shabbat. Here, it's just the opposite, that you're allowed to carry things that normally would be construed as muktzah on Shabbat if one is talking about garbage removal.
That's pretty
good. Okay.
We have a pail that was filled up with urine, you took it out, you dump it.
Yeah.
What about bringing it back?
That's what it says, he can bring it back.
He's CAM.
Yes. Yeah.
What's the heter that you would give back?
The Gemara says, he says you can put a little water in it to bring it back. Okay? Look, if you want to see, here are all of these halachot, the way they're brought in the Shulchan Aruch. I've made some Xeroxes of the Shulchan Aruch. I don't know if I've made enough, but there should be enough to go around, one for every two or one for every three. Okay?
Someone takes a person to the hospital on Shabbat, by car, so where is this head to put the engine off and it gets there?
The various heterim of what you're allowed to do under circumstances with the shaloi achiloli asidlova. I mean, you're allowed. Let's not go into that for the moment. But the various things that are permissible on the question of pikuach nefesh and shabbat, when the issue was that if you don't allow the people to come back, as the Rambam says, then they won't go the next time around. Okay, kol davar matuna. all disgusting stuff, kagon rei, v'ki, v'tzora, v'ein shel adam, u'vein shel tarnagolim, u'chiyotze bahen, im haya b'chatzer chiyoshvin ba, mutar lahutziyam la'ashpa o lebeit hakiseh. You're allowed to move them out into the garbage dump or to the outhouse. V'afilu b'lokli, and you don't even need to carry them in a utensil. V'im hayu b'chatzer she'ein darsham, if they were in a place where you were not going to be there. In other words, I suppose that's what the Rav was concerned with in Ben Hashmashos, if the Suda was in a separate meal, that you weren't going to be back in that room at all until after Shabbos. Then, asur lahotziya. Ve'im yarei mepnei hatinok shelo yitlach lechba. But if you're worried that the baby will run out and dirty himself in this, mutar lachapot al-akli. אף על פי שמותר להוציא גרף שווה ועבוד של מי רגליים, אסור להחסירם, אלא אם כן נותן לתוך המים. You're allowed to, you should not bring them back completely empty, but they should serve some purpose by bringing them back with, say, some water in them. No, in the house there's a presumption that you use all the rooms of your house. The chatzer, you may only be using ones that are actually, right? Not all gardens are areas which you would normally inhabit. Ain't no sin gera shavei lachakah.